Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday afternoon. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Tonight, speaking of ESPN, 30 for 30 films. We love 30 for 30s. And tonight is part two on Michael Vick. And who was right in the middle of that? It's producer Stanley Nelson is on the line with us. Stanley, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. How was part one received from the feedback you got?
The feedback I got was great. It seemed like it was very, very well received. And we're waiting to see how part two does tonight.
Obviously, he lived a complicated life and had a lot of different layers to his career on the field and off the field. How did you go about trying to tackle that? And obviously, this is long, so you had a lot of ground to cover because, what is it, 4 hours in length if you count both parts? So how did you go about trying to, you know, figure out how to make all this work, I guess is the best way to put it?
Well, I mean, I think the big choice for us was, you know, where do we put the dog fighting and those allegations and the trial? You know, where does that come in the story? So we finally came to the realization that the best way to tell the story was that the way it played out for us and in the public. And so, you know, Michael, the first part of the show is really Michael Vick rise. And as the public, you know, we didn't know anything at all about the dog fighting at all until the story broke on the news. And for everybody was kind of shocked. And so that's the way we play the story.
How much time did you spend around him for this?
We did three long interviews with Mike, and before that we probably sat down and talked a couple of times, you know, about what we wanted to do and what we're trying to do. So, you know, we spent a lot of time with him. Those are probably the longest amount of time I've spent with anybody actually doing interviews. So, you know, I don't know, we probably interviewed him for, if you add it all up, probably 8 or 9 hours.
And what did you think, being around him that long? What was your takeaway from Michael Vick?
I think Michael Vick, you know, is very sincere about the mistakes that he made and trying to make amends. I think that, you know, that's one of the things that impressed me, that has impressed everybody, you know, all through it. I mean, you know, people say, you know, why was he let back into the NFL? Why did Andy Reid pick him up, you know, for the Philadelphia Eagles? You know, I think because people were convinced of his sincerity. I think that there are a certain amount of people who will never forgive and never forget, you know, the dog fighting and the cruelty that Michael showed to animals. But I do think he's sincere in his regret and his apologies for what he did, and also for trying his best to do what he can to make amends, you know, speaking out about it. He spoke before Congress and other things.
That's well said, and I agree with you. He's been on the show several times. That we obviously, it's just by phone, so you don't really get to know somebody. But I agree in the aspect that there are just certain people you're never going to change, and I get that, and that's their prerogative. I think if you consider where their star was and how powerful they were in their sports and the fall, and I think there are two guys that really jump out at me, A-Rod and Michael Vick, who have done a fantastic job of repairing a really, really bad image. And you could have easily seen them not being able to recover. But I think both of them have done a really – that was a tough job. I thought that was a huge mountain both of them had to climb. And I think A-Rod has done a good job. And I think Michael Vick should be put in that category too, because I think he's done what you need to do to try to go about, like I said, you can't worry about the people you're never going to change, but just trying to repair things with people that maybe you can, I think he's done a good job in that department.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we didn't make the film to exonerate Michael Vick. You know, we made the film to tell his story, and so that's up to the audience, you know, to take away from it what they will. But I have no doubt that Mike is sincere in regretting what he did and doing everything that he can to make amends.
We're talking to Stanley Nelson. He is the director for Vick, the 30 for 30 on Michael Vick. You can see part two tonight on ESPN. You talked about people forgiving Michael Vick and that some will and some have, and some won't ever. In the time that you spent with him, did you get the sense that Michael Vick has forgiven himself?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's come out of it as whole as he could be. I mean, there's a certain amount of regret and sadness there. You know, I mean, for like anybody, you know, who kind of blows something that is a great thing that they had and could have had. As someone says in the end of the film, you know, there'll always be a bit of, you know, would have, could have, should have. I mean, I think Mike actually says that. But yeah, that's part of his story. That's part of his legacy.
As you discussed, and we saw in part one, you go through his upbringing in a lot of the early days. What were you able to learn about that aspect of his life, of just, you know, him, his upbringing?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, he was born and raised in Newport News, Virginia, and I think that for us became a real character in the film. You know, it's a really, you know, special area. Mike was raised in the projects. His mother was a teenager when he was born. He was our second child. And as she says, you know, I was still in high school. It was ridiculous. That's a quote from her, you know. And he, that's how he grew up, you know, in you know, what many would consider, you know, poverty. And, you know, Newport News is a place where for many people sports is seen as the way out. You know, as Mike says, you know, it was ball, jail, or die. For me and my friends. And so, you know, he, you know, balled and played ball, you know, to the best of his ability. So, yeah, Newport News is a really special place, and I think becomes a part of what the film is about. You know, as Mike goes to college and in the pros, you know, he takes his friends with him, you know, and he felt that was something that he owed to the people he grew up with, to bring them along with him. And, you know, in some ways that turns out not to be, you know, the best thing he could have possibly done.
Did you get the sense, because you brought up Andy Reid and obviously the head coach with the Eagles at the time, and I've always used the phrase that Andy Reid has the quarterback rehabilitation program and it worked wonders for Michael Vick, that maybe he doesn't have this second chance, he doesn't have this redemption story if it's not for Andy Reid?
Yeah, I mean, there was a thought, you know, among, you know, so many people. Tony Dungy says it in the film. Mike's wife, Kiafa, says it in the film. That after he got out of prison, he was never going to play in the NFL again. I mean, that was what was thought. And that, you know, Tony Dungy was really working with Mike to rehabilitate him as a human being and to work with him, you know, just to come back into the world. But, you know, as Tony says, he had no expectations that Mike would come back and play in the NFL. So, you know, without Andy Reid, who knows what would have happened with Mike. And also Donovan McNabb, who was the quarterback of Philly at that time, who spoke up for Mike.
I know a lot of people will be checking out part two tonight. Thank you so much for the visit, Stanley. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right, that is Stanley Nelson, who is the producer for Mike Vick, 30 for 30, or he's the director, I guess I should say, not the producer. He's the director of that, and part two will indeed air tonight. We will come back. By the way, Barton Simmons at the bottom of the hour, Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock, Jerry Stackhouse before we get out of here as well. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We'll be right back.
satisfaction.
Why? Are you not happy? Is there something we can do? Are you hungry?
I'm always hungry. I mean, I don't know if I'm ever not hungry. It's the root of all of it.
Well, we haven't had, let's see, Derek Mason dropped off, I think, a U-Haul of Girl Scout cookies earlier in the week. So we don't have 469 boxes of Girl Scout cookies anymore in the building. They're gone. Then we had Dunkin' Donuts drop off a U-Haul of donuts, coffee, bagels. That's been sifted through, so that's all gone. So we don't have, I guess.
I have Girl Scout cookies on my desk, my new desk.
I've got Girl Scout cookies coming out of my nose, my nostrils, and my ears. I had to be careful there.
Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that.
I saw everybody tense up.
Any part of it.
I had the dump button
Big
ready.
Cheese.
You guys don't trust? No, we're not in the trust tree?
No, we're in the trust tree, but no? You know, still. It's like a dog going, woo! You know.
I saw you guys tense up a little.
Just a little. Just a little.
I need to clarify something because I told you guys I goofed. Yeah, we make mistakes in this business. We do. It's live radio. Yeah, we're live. Can you believe that? 4 hours every day. This is not taped. It didn't make any sense, right? Because our conversation carried over during the break. And they're going, how can that be? How can you have Derrick Henry? That doesn't make any sense how he could be that low. Well, we started talking. And then I even blurted it out. And I think, Elijah, you were thinking it at the same time. And then we all kind of looked at each other like, it's got to be. Like, yeah. I've looked at this wrong. Because I said, that would make sense if it was PPR. This is going back. If you're just tuning in, you have no idea. CBS Sports, like others, are already putting out their fantasy football rankings. And I get it.
Because they got nothing better to do.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what they do year round. That's their job. I mean, people care. I mean, believe it or not, you think if nobody's looking at it, they wouldn't do it. But people are looking at it. And oh, by the way, I clicked on it. I'm looking at it. It's ridiculous. It's early February. I get it. I've been playing fantasy football for 30 years. It's kind of a big deal to me. I always want to know, like, okay, what are they thinking? So all their, like, so-called fantasy football experts did, like, their top 10 at every position. And I was like, you know, all of the talk we've had about Derrick Henry, let's just see where all these guys are ranking Derrick Henry. And I'm like, man, they got Derrick Henry low in these rankings. And then during the break, you came in here, Elijah came in, and I said, man, that would make sense. That was PPR like that, especially when the Austin Eckler. I'm like, come on. And Fournette, some of those guys, I get it. Miles Sanders, they catch the ball a lot, so that would make sense why they would be higher. I didn't look at it correctly. It was PPR. Mm. So my bad. You even had, I think, a couple people text like,
yeah, that's
probably PPR.
Makes sense if it's a PPR league.
Yeah, we had that discussion before we saw those texts, but to the people who did text, you're right. It was PPR. So I'll say it again. My bad. Because that would make no sense. Like, I probably wouldn't reference CBS Sports again, like fantasy-wise, if they were going to have Derrick Henry 10 in standard leagues. But it was PPR.
Well.
So we can put that to bed, and I clarified.
But, you know, here's the thing on that point. When you talk about how much you're going to pay Derrick Henry, you're probably going to have to pay him like he can be in that type of league, like he is a three-down back. And
well, that goes back to what we've been talking about. Those guys are higher because they do more things.
Right.
So,
and he did more this year.
He did. But this is what John Robinson's got. These are the weird conversations that he's going to have with his agent.
Right.
Yeah, we love him, but. But brace yourself. Yeah, but he's not Edgerrin James. He's not Marshall Faulk. He's not Ricky Waters. He caught the ball a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we all know, right, the guys that caught a lot of balls out of the backfield too. Now, he did. He got better. He has gotten better, and there's no doubt. But he's not in those categories.
No. Arthur Smith just, I mean, he used him. And they need to use him more because I think he's capable of it. It's just he's never really had to do it. So now you're teaching him how to do something that he's never, you know, really had to do. He didn't do it much at Alabama. Hasn't done it much to this point here. But now you got to pay him, so you have to decide, all right, now you have to decide, okay, well, am I going to pay him like a three-down back? Because I think you're going to have to. I mean, if he says that Zeke is the floor, that's a three-down back.
Then doesn't John Robinson have to push back and say, yeah, but he's not.
Right.
That's great that you want him paid like a three-down back, but this just in, he's not McCaffrey. He's not Barkley. He's not Ezekiel Elliott. He's not Kamara. And all those guys were ranked higher than him because of that element. He's not them. And he's never going to be them.
Yeah.
He can always be better. He's not going to be them. But when it comes to just pure running back and what he can do, obviously he was the leading rusher in the NFL. So he's got a leg up on them when it comes to that. But I don't know. His agent's not going to want to hear that.
Yeah.
If he's really seeking that type of money.
I just wonder, and we won't know this. And
by the way, what's the counter to that?
What? The counter to if he says I don't know.
He's going to have to counter to make his case. So what's the counter? He's going to get better? What do you say? Give him more chances? What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, build the offense around him and use him more in that way. I guess that's the counter. Look, I think he's capable of doing more. He's shown signs of it. They were using him more in a passing role out of the backfield some. But they did that out of necessity because you weren't getting anywhere with Deion Lewis. So what's going to be the plan for the Titans? Are they going to just rely on Derrick Henry and say, well, we're going to pay him all this money, let's just use him and then get another back just to, you know, give him a few plays off? Or, you know, what is going to be the plan there? What I'm curious about, and I think this is something we're never going to know the answer to, is what is John Robinson's walk-away price? What is the number where he says, I can't do it, I got to walk away? Because he's got one. He has to have one.
Sure he does.
You know, everybody has that. And it's a counter to that. What is Derrick Henry's camp walk-away price of, nah, not good enough, we're going to test the open market? Or, you know, unless he gets franchise tagged, then that creates a whole new conversation. But, you know, these are the things they got to figure out. If Amy Adams Strunk and J-Rob have already gotten together and go, you know what, if he wants 15 and a half, give him 15 and a half. If they've already done that, then I think we'll be getting an announcement soon. My guess is that's probably not the conversation that has taken place. My guess is the conversation is, okay, let's lowball first, get a discussion started and see where we're at. And that's what always happens. The agent will come out with a number that's way too high. The team will come out with a number that's way too low, and then they try and meet somewhere in the middle. That's how this works. Now, what is that number in the middle? How far to one side is that number in the middle? That's the question we're going to be asking until he signs somewhere.
So then I peeked at the quarterbacks because I wanted to see. Now, remember, they're only doing top 10.
And this is PBR.
Do you think? No, well, this, it doesn't really, because I looked, I wanted to make sure. Because, you know, it really doesn't matter as much. You know what I mean? Because most, even standard, you're going to get probably the rushing yard. So it doesn't say anything. I looked because I read what they said about the quarterbacks. It doesn't say anything about it being PPR. Or it looks like it's just standard. I mean, sometimes quarterback leagues, you could get 6 points for a passing touchdown as opposed to four. So maybe that, but I don't see, there's nothing listed about points or anything. So I was just curious. So where is there any chance that Ryan Tannehill will be in a top 10? What do you think?
If he is,
how would you answer that?
If he is, he's probably 10th.
But do you think he made a top 10 in anybody's list?
No.
Elijah?
I'd say he might make it in one, maybe two. I don't know fantasy-wise people are that high on him.
He's probably going to say he's in all of them.
Because of the Derrick Henry rushing volume, I would say the number is actually pretty low despite how efficient he was.
I think there were, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 experts. Ryan Tannehill appeared in none of the top tens. And I bring this up because, you know, we've thrown out some numbers. So if you're going to pay him 30 or more, doesn't he need to be in one of these top tens?
I mean, not necessarily because it's
by the way, Jameis Winston is in some of these top tens.
Well, yeah, because he throws it all the time.
Okay.
They don't have that kind of running game. This offense is built on it's built on Derrick Henry.
Okay, but I'm that's what, exactly. So I'm then saying, so for everybody saying, well, you have to pay him that, well, then can't John Robinson go, yeah, those guys get that, cause that, but we're not asking him to do that stuff. We're asking him to throw 22 times a game.
This is the mess they've created, and I'm not saying it's a bad
mess. So that's great, but those guys get paid that because they're asking their offenses are asking them to sling it around all the time. We're not asking them to do that. Well, we want him to – that we've got a certain plan, and it doesn't require him to throw the ball 40 times a game. So can't you lower the price by saying that?
You can try.
Well, why would you give him – so just because those guys get $32 million, even though we're not going to ask you to do what those guys do, we're going to just give you $32 million?
Yeah, but here's the problem, Darren. That usually you don't have a situation like they have this year where you have so many quarterbacks that are going to be available and so many teams that are looking for quarterbacks, looking for good quarterbacks. And so, therefore, you will have a team out there that's probably willing to pay him that because of what they saw last year, because they're so desperate. And the Titans could fall in that category. The Titans have a good team around Ryan Tannehill. But they need the right quarterback. Because, yes, the offense is built around Derrick Henry. They are asking Derrick Henry to do a lot. The plan is to bring him back and have Derrick Henry be the catalyst for the offense. But you still need a quarterback that can make those throws and make those plays that Tannehill made this year when you need him to do it. Unfortunately, the price of doing business is, as I have said time and time again, you're going to have to overpay him. You just probably are. Or you're going to end up with, you know, some slappy that you hope that you can put something together and that Derrick Henry can stay healthy and Derrick Henry can have the same amount of production that he did this year. Which I wouldn't bank on that.
By the way, Josh Allen is in all these lists.
You know, Josh Allen had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
It's kind of like PPR, though, too. Josh Allen with his legs.
I know.
Got a lot of, a lot runs, of that value, too.
Yeah, but Tannehill can run.
He could.
It's not like he's a statue. He certainly proved he can run.
Right.
If you need him to.
It's just you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Dak Prescott on all these lists. I mean, that's – by the way, Carson Wentz made one of these. Seventh.
Are the Cowboys going to sign Dak anytime soon?
Well, that's what I'm asking. So, like, is that would be – I'd be curious what he signs then.
Yeah. And I think that's holding up some things.
So what do you think he signs for? Give me a year. What do you think a number would be?
33.
Okay. So you're going to give Tannehill 30? He's that close? Is he that close?
I'd feel better at 27.
Okay, that's what I'm getting. So why do we keep throwing out 30s? Why? Ryan Tannehill, just because?
Okay, so rank the free agent
Dak
quarterbacks.
Dak Prescott is in all these lists, and some of them as high as 4.
Okay.
And if his number's 33, Ryan Tannehill's number is in the 30s? What?
So do this. Free agent quarterbacks. Was Dak number one, in your opinion? Or is Brady number one?
Well... And Dak is. It depends on what are you doing? Are you wanting for a year? Is it a stopgap? Is it future? Like to take over your franchise for a long term?
This year, how much are you going to pay him this year? Is the question that you asked. You said based on a year, and I'm looking at the quarterbacks.
But Dak would be getting signed to take over somebody's franchise. He's not going anywhere. Right. But if he was, he is being signed as a guy in the prime of his career.
But you're still
to take
using
over
him as
a franchise quarterback. Brady would be coming in as somebody, maybe the greatest ever at the end of his career, stopgap for a year, maybe two.
But
so
it's a different conversation. Yeah, but I still think you have to lump them all together with. I mean, how much is Breeze going to get? If Breeze comes back, which
he's going to,
if you pay attention to the Pro Bowl, I don't know. I mean, why take a month to think about it? Just because you just want to take a month off? I mean, Russell Wilson gives up his starting spot in the Pro Bowl, so Breeze can start. I don't know. But that's going to factor in, too, how much he gets. They all run together.
We'll come back. Barton Simmons, speaking of CBS, CBS and 24/7 Sports. We'll find out how everybody did yesterday on signing day. We do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Can't think of anybody better to talk to after a signing day. Our next guest, Barton Simmons, CBS Sports, 24/7 Sports, is on the line with us. He is the recruiting guru. Barton, how you doing?
What's up, guys? I'm good. How's it going?
Good. I just want to get your perspective, and I know we've asked you this before, but now that every year that goes by and we're a little bit more entrenched in this new way of doing things on the recruiting trail, and it starts in December now, with the early signing period, and now ends up on what used to be the day. The day is not that big of a deal anymore, at least not to the levels that we are accustomed to. So do you like it? Do you like it more as time goes along? Do you like it less as time goes along? What do you think?
Personally, I like it less. Now, I mean, it makes for a less stressful January. It makes for a less stressful day. There's just less to do. But I mean, in terms of just the event, the kind of the holiday that signing day can be, it's just different. It's just got a different feel. And even the early signing period, you know, which has become everything the old signing period was in terms of activity, the way it's just sort of plopped right there in the middle of December amid bowl season and holiday season and high school all-star games and all these kinds of things, it makes it a little bit tougher to ramp up to sort of create this holiday out of it. From a personal standpoint, like, I think it was more fun the old way. From a business standpoint, it's sort of a push. We get two signing days instead of one, so it's sort of indifferent on that front. But I also do think that from the standpoint of the players, it's not ideal either. I mean, I don't think it promotes the, you know, players being having the best opportunity to find the best spot for them or the best school that they could land at. They're sort of pressured to commit in that early signing period regardless of what they have, instead of waiting until all the cards are on the table in February. So, you know, it's mixed reviews. And I think college coaches feel the same way. I think they're, you know, it makes for a less stressful January for them too.
Yeah.
But I also think it makes for them not necessarily being able to build out the best possible class they could.
Now things go quiet for the rest of the month, right? No activity,
yep.
And then they pick back up in March. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this February, there's no in-person contact at all.
They
can still talk on the phone, that sort of thing. And then, you know, the next time they're actually out on the road evaluating will be in, I want to say mid-April maybe, is when that kicks in.
So once you get past the usual suspects of, you know, Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, who we always, you know, those schools were always bringing up this time of year, what stood out to you? Like, give us something or a couple that stood out to you outside of the usual suspects, for good or bad.
Are we talking day, or are we talking the entire cycle?
The entire cycle, like good or bad. You know, how would you answer that outside of those five schools?
Well, I think, just because we're coming off signing day, I think Texas A&M deserves mention because they sort of started to creep up towards that five. Because I agree, that five is there's a big gap between that five and everybody else, and it used to be one and maybe two, and then everyone else, and now it's five and everyone else. And so. I think that Texas A&M beat Alabama yesterday on a four-star defensive lineman out of Mississippi who was a really elite kid that Bama really wanted, propelled them to sort of just right on the cusp of the top five, and perhaps gives us a little bit of foreshadowing of Jimbo Fisher getting closer at Texas A&M. You know, I think that they're going to have a roster this year that's going to, you know, turn just about everyone, and I think they're hoping that some of the guys that were backups last year beat out some of the guys that were starters. And so, you know, when you put all that together with a pretty good signing class, you know, that's encouraging in College Station. And we all know the expectations and ambitions that that program has. I think the other thing that's a, sort of note, and again, this is related in a way to your first question, to just the signing day landscape. I kind of, when I wrote winners and losers column for CBS, a loser I mentioned was just collectively new head coaches, because the new head coaches just don't have the opportunity to build up a class like they used to. And so
I even heard Lane Kiffin reference that yesterday. He was like, it'll get better after this. But, you know, when I came in, you know, you already missed out on one crop. And so, you know, well, it'll get better from here. But he already referenced that, and I'm sure others did too.
No, you can't. I mean, Lane Kiffin didn't have a great day, but you can't really knock him for it. I mean, they just – they're – excuse me. They're so hamstrung. They're so handcuffed. They take over. You know, the coach that had the best – one of the best classes among the new coaches was Mike Leach, because Mike Leach came in after all these guys had already signed in the early signing period. And so he didn't have to recruit anybody. He just – you know, he inherited a pretty solid Joe Moorhead class. But, you know, Florida State had its worst class in program history. When you look, Ole Miss was very average in terms of the way it closed. Missouri was 50th, even though they landed a pretty solid prospect. Baylor and Dave Aranda, 54th in the country. Just it's and the contrast to that is that it used to be where when you get a new coach, if you get them in and give them a decent amount of time to work, man, they can do a lot of damage in January when they get these guys on campus and just start poaching other recruits. Like, no one's safe, and they just don't have that opportunity anymore. So I think that's really a new element to this. That's, you know, guys like Lane Kiffin, it's just about surviving that first signing day, and then, you know, this 2021 class, you know, that's really going to be where they display whether or not they've got it on the recruiting trail.
I didn't see Michigan in any top 10s anywhere, and I think they were maybe in the next 10 if you look at most rankings. But I guess the question I have is, isn't that why they brought Jim Harbaugh in? I mean, there's already been so much around his tenure at Michigan of not beating Ohio State and, you know, not winning the conference. He's got all that going on already. But isn't Jim Harbaugh in Michigan supposed to kill it on the recruiting trail, and here he sits in year what, and he's still not in a top 10 situation?
I mean, he's sniffed around at the top 10. He's typically either in the top 10 or on the cusp. You know, he's gotten as high as, I think, number 5 in the country back in the 2017 class. But – I mean, ultimately, I think you brought Jim Harbaugh in to you brought him in to win championships and, you know, compete at the very highest level. And he's done that to a degree. Obviously, he hadn't beat Ohio State and he hadn't won championships at the highest level, but he's made Michigan very consistently competitive. And I think you're getting at a point that I agree with, which is that is what's missing. Like, when Michigan plays Ohio State and gets run off the field, there's a very clear talent discrepancy. And so I do think that there's something missing in the Michigan recruiting operation to where, and whether it's a want to, or whether it's a, limitations there under Harbaugh that we're missing. I don't know, but there is something missing there in terms of their ability to go out and recruit in that top 5 level that we were discussing earlier. You know, I felt like, you know, in the satellite camp age, when Jim Harbaugh was going on this sort of world tour and was sort of creating this big hubbub of just, you know, look at this guy everywhere you turn, putting on satellite camps and kind of bending the rules. You know, there was an energy around the program at that point that people were responding to. And I think the energy and the novelty of Harbaugh has worn off a little bit. And so now it's just about, can they go out and win some of these battles? And, you know, they're winning some, but they're not winning the biggest ones right now. They're, you know, that's Ohio State in the Big Ten.
We're talking to Barton Simmons, 24/7 CBS Sports, a little recruiting after National Signing Day, and a team that did finish in the top 10, and they didn't start the day in the top 10, was the Tennessee Volunteers. I think this has been a very good recruiting class for Jeremy Pruitt as they cap it off with a top 10 finish, and they were able to steal away a pretty big wide receiver from Florida State yesterday as well.
Yeah, Tennessee had a nice day. They jumped from – they started the day at 14th. I think they even dipped to 15th at one point during the day, and then they landed at number 10, thanks in part to landing DeMarcus Beckwith and Malachi Wideman, who was a Florida State commit previously. And by the way, both those guys, they're going to be pretty good on the intramural basketball circuit at Tennessee as well. Shoot, Malachi may be playing for the team. I'm not sure, but he's that good. He's good. He's a major college basketball recruit. And but this, like, I really like this Tennessee class. And I think I'm kind of glad it finished in the top 10, because I think that's if it weren't in the top 10, it would be one of these classes that I'd sort of be looking at and say, you know what, regardless of where it's rated, it feels like it's better than that. You just, all their prospects, all the guys they landed, just, they seem to be really quality evaluations. It's I think it's a really substantive group. I think they hit, you know, the right positions, the right skill sets at those positions. It's the type of class that every time we saw these guys, we liked them more. So I just think they're doing something right in that recruiting department in terms of their approach from an evaluation standpoint, and getting guys that are sort of, you know, more than just the shiny objects. You know, they're the guys that I think can really make a meaningful impact over, you know, several years.
So how many of these guys do you think can help them from day one? I know that's asking a lot of a freshman, but, you know, you do have some, obviously, that will stand out from the get-go. Who are some that can help Tennessee right away?
Well, I think that they've got a couple wide receivers that are certainly good enough. I mean, Malachi Wideman, who we talked about, but also you've got Jalen Hyatt, who's got pretty good length and is one of the faster players in the country. I mean, he's a 10.4, 10.3 type 100-meter dash kid, which is, I mean, if you're not a track guy, I mean, that's absolutely moving. Jimmy Callaway is another one that's just a football player out of Georgia. I think that receiver group, you could throw D. Beckwith in there as well. I'd be surprised if we don't see an impact out of one or two of those guys early on. You know, I think when you look at the line of scrimmage too, and you know, it's always a little bit of a crapshoot whether those guys are ready to compete. But I just think the physical makeup of those guys will give them a chance. Amari Thomas, whether he's a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman, is just a thick, really physically impressive kid who was the MVP of the state championship game in basketball last year. I watched it. I mean, he can move at that size. You know, Tyler Barron on the offensive line, on the defensive line, is similarly impressive. You know, I just think that they've got, you know, it's sort of a collection of guys with some mass and some size at the line of scrimmage that they're, you know, I would just be surprised if one of those guys doesn't emerge as being a contributor as well.
Barton, last thing, I don't believe Will Muschamp is long for South Carolina. If his son doesn't believe in his program, who else is going to believe in him? I mean, my goodness, that is such a weird story. His son goes to Georgia?
Yeah, it is kind of bizarre. And he decommitted actually from Colorado State. He was a Colorado State commit, and decommitted from Colorado State to be a walk on at Georgia. So it's not a scholarship spot; it's a walk on spot. And I don't know, maybe he wants just, you know, a little bit of intel from that Georgia locker room or something. Maybe he's, you know, he's just inserted his mole over there in his SEC East rival. But, I mean, look, that's I don't know what to make of that. Will Muschamp's got bigger problems because they signed, or they didn't sign. They got committed. This is one of the actually more unique stories of signing day. A five-star defensive lineman, one of the best players in the country, is from Columbia, South Carolina. Plays with Will Muschamp's son, buddies with him. They got him committed in the early signing period, but he didn't sign. He was going to wait until February to sign with his team. Well, during January, he took an unofficial visit to LSU, was there for several days. LSU supposedly came in second in the first signing period. So what's going on there? No one really knows. All right, well, he goes and he has another signing day with his team, announces, doesn't actually say I'm committing to South Carolina or I'm signing with South Carolina, just says I'll be playing with my buddies next year. And everyone assumes that means he's still committed and still will sign with South Carolina. But we're sitting here now about 24 hours after that announcement, and there's still no letter of intent that's arrived at South Carolina.
Wow.
So who knows what's going to happen. And by the way, Will Muschamp was at that signing day ceremony because his son, again, is at the school. And so perhaps Will Muschamp was trying to give him a little nudge to make sure he got the job done. But to this point, we're still waiting. So there's always a good story like that on signing day, and Jordan Birch is delivering this year.
What a bizarre story. Wow. Okay. He's going to go play with his buddies. All right. Not sure what that means, but we'll go with that. Barton, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. You bet. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Barton Simmons. Always good stuff from him. 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports. Covered a lot of ground today, and we're going to continue that. Elliot Freeman at 1 o'clock. We'll get into some hockey talk with him, and then we'll give you a chance to win some tickets afterwards. Tickets to see the Predators and the Islanders. That'll be the next home game for the Preds when they get off this Western Canada trip. So just keep that in mind. They're going to play next Thursday, the night before Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that'll be good. So good prize there. Be paying attention. So before we get to Elliot, I have a question for you. I want to throw this out, unless you have more stuff you need to read.
No, throw it out.
We know what's coming up here in a few weeks. We'll get into this with Elliot.
Valentine's Day? Is this
Valentine's Day.
Okay. It's next Friday.
But the trade deadline is coming up for the NHL. And we've asked David Poile this question. He doesn't have an answer, and I believe him. He really doesn't have an answer because he doesn't know where his team is right now. But if you look at this team and you get one move, and I'm not going to say specific players. I'm just going to say you can make a move. What would you do, Darren McFarland, with the Predators? Would you make a move?
Well, that is pretty broad for me to answer because I have no idea what you're really asking me. What,
like, do you think that a trade is going to fix all that ails you and that is going to help push this team that is knocking on the door of a playoff spot into that playoff spot? Do you think that, because we've talked about the weaknesses that, okay, they're hurting on defense right now because Ellis is out and they were already thin with the depth on defense. So do you give up a forward to get a defenseman? Do you need more firepower up front? So do you try and move a package to get a better forward than some that you have? Do you go ahead and say, you know what, we got to unload some unrestricted free agents? Like, how would you go about doing it?
Ooh,
I know it's broad.
That was a truckload of stuff.
But it is broad. That's the point.
Let me start with your first one. I would not. I don't think it's going to change anything. Change is either going to come from within or it's not.
So you would stand pat?
Well, I didn't say I would stand pat. You asked about addition. An addition, would somebody come in and change things?
Right.
And my answer is, in my opinion, no.
Okay.
One, it's already tricky enough as it is. It's hard. Like, how many times do you see all the trade deadline acquisitions, and how many truly are impactful?
Well, we saw it here last year firsthand.
And everybody loved it. That's what I always remind people. Let's not forget how you loved it.
I was one of those.
Everybody loved the moves. It's a risk. It's a gamble. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And everybody was on board with Granlund. Everybody was on board with Boyle. And for heaven's sakes, everybody was on board with Wayne Simmons. People have been clamoring for Wayne Simmons for a good while. It happened, and it didn't work out. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's, like I said, it's a risk and a
gamble. Brian Boyle did.
He did, but you gave him a second. I mean, it's not like you gave him a bag of peanuts.
No, you gave him
a second-round pick. I mean, that's pretty hefty. And, yeah, he did good. He was good.
Yeah.
Look, I love dealing with all – well, Grayland's still here, but, I mean, Boyle and Simmons were great
sure.
to deal with. They're great guys to deal with. Just
and I think, and quite frankly, I thought it was a mistake.
But you're not training for guys to have great guys. I mean, you're training for guys to be impactful and to change.
And Boyle was impactful.
Well, not enough.
Well, I don't even
impactful, not enough because they lost in the first round.
Yeah,
you're asking to change things. What are you asking for? Are you asking just to get in? Is that your mission?
Right,
just to get in, or is it to actually get in and do something?
Well, if you get in, you got to do something. I mean, that's
like
the
I
whole
thought.
Goal.
Stastny was a really good trade for Winnipeg a couple years. Like that was impactful.
That was the extra oomph.
I think Vegas has had some pretty good impactful moves.
Mm-hmm.
I think Columbus, it worked.
Yep.
Okay, it got them out of the first round.
Yep.
If that was their objective to go further than they've ever gone in the playoffs, then it worked. I just think it's more times than not it doesn't. Okay, more times than not it ends up. By the way, the Minnesota and Boston trade did work. Worked out well for Boston.
Yep.
Didn't work out. You know, I guess they got a young guy, so it's still, but it's worked out better for Boston.
With Charlie Coyle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, he had a big goal last night.
He's really good.
I was watching the Blackhawks and Bruins. Kind of had a big goal last night.
Yeah. Well, and I guess my whole thing is, you know, if you get to a point where you realize, all right, probably not going to make it. And you sell off, some, you try and get something for a guy like Craig Smith or Granlund, you know, expiring contracts. Then you see what you have in Ellie Tolvanen. You see what you have in Yakov Trenin on a nightly basis. You see what you have, you know, Derek Carr is in Vegas.
I was saying, we've got a breaking, hit the breaking news sounder.
You see what you have in a guy like Daniel Carr. Even though I think you know the answer to that, but some young guys in Milwaukee, I hope it doesn't get to that point. I mean, I want to see them try and make another run like they did a few years ago where they barely got in and then we all know what happened. But that was a different team. That was also, they were playing more consistently at times. But I'm just curious because I think that's something we're going to be asking for the next few weeks of what's he going to do? Is he going to do anything? Can he do anything to make this team better right now?
Stay tuned. Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet is next.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.